So our first talk is Contribution of Women to Linguistic Vitality in Northwestern Nigeria. I would love to hear about revitalization from you as well. Our speaker is Rebecca Patterson from the University of Oregon. The talk will be 20 minutes, and then we'll have a 10-minute question and answer session.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you all for coming. I know, hard room to find. Okay, my title is The Contribution of Women to Linguistic Vitality in Northwestern Nigeria. And I have one big goal, and my big goal is awareness. I'm happy to see that it's mostly women in the audience because you're who I want to talk to, actually. As a female researcher, I went to Nigeria, and as I'll give some anecdotal evidence for in a few minutes, I primarily worked with men who were appointed by the community to work with me. And so as a female researcher, I had an interesting interaction with them. And we don't doubt that women are vital to the life of a language or to any community, but we don't often explicitly talk about the role of women, at least in the Nigerian context. And I am speaking from a context of Northwestern Nigeria, and so I'll show you where the place I'm talking about in just a minute. And I know there's other parts of the world where the contribution of women is much more recognized and encouraged. But my goal today is awareness in three ways. One is, how do we validate women in the work of language documentation? And in this statement, I mean women from the community, mostly. How do we get them involved and keep them involved? Can we develop new expectations for the contribution of women in language development? In the context I primarily worked in, women are not educators of the minority languages, but they are educators in the home. And we all recognize that women's involvement with their children is the primary, as primary caregivers, is essential in the communities. But how can we take that knowledge that's being transferred intergenerationally and encourage women outside of their home or in their interest to educate not just in the majority language, but also possibly in the minority language? And then third, will we enlist women more readily in the tasks of language documentation and maintenance? And by this I mean, can I get them to have some free time so that they can be involved in the documentation process? And will I seek them out, perhaps seek permission or request their time from whoever they otherwise would give their time to? Okay, so a little bit about the field context. In the bottom corner, you can see the location of Nigeria in West Africa. But then the larger map is it's a linguistic map of Nigeria, so the various colors. The blue color is Benue Congo, by far the largest geographic group of languages. Yellow are Afroasiatic Chadic languages. Green in the top corner is Kanuri. The purple in the far corner is actually Semitic. There's some Mande languages, there's Ijboy languages, and then the lighter green is Fufulde, which is West Atlantic. Okay, so a lot of Niger-Congo languages, some Nilo-Saharan, some Afro-Asiatic. The languages that I primarily work with are in this top corner in the northwest. I've put a circle around it. And these languages are Benue-Congo languages of the Kanji group. So here's the same layout of Nigeria. The circled area is the same area. And the languages I'm looking at today are called Northwest Kanji. And they're part of Kanji, and so all the little circles on this map indicate other locations of Kanji languages. So it's a dispersed group, but there is relatedness between them. And my anecdotes about cultural interaction and the way language functions in the daily life of people is taken from this region, and I'm not claiming to or assuming that it's true in other areas for other Kanji languages. So that field context, within that blue circle again, there's three language groups that I interact with mostly. One is called Tmaten, that's my primary focus for my linguistic research, Chilela, and Utun. Now, these languages also have other names that show up in the literature. For example, Chilela was originally described with the name Dakakari. So if you've ever heard of Dakakari, that's Chilela. Utun is often called Dukanchi or Dukawa. And Tmaten is sometimes called Fakanchi. And then the other complication is that the neighboring groups around have additional names for these languages, but I'm using the internally used names. So my presentation is based on two time periods, mostly. The first time period was 2005 to 2007, when I resided in Nigeria and made many trips to this region. And then the second major time period was in September of 2013. And there's a great contrast in the way that I interacted with women between the two. And primarily, I spent time with Itma'en speakers. And I was doing research, grammatical research, trying to figure out the noun class system originally, and then further research later on. But these three groups have a lot of similarity in culture. The traditional religion has a lot of shared concepts and celebrations and practices. Agriculturally, they're very similar, and their lifestyle is very similar. And their linguistic situation is also very similar. So the three lessons learned that I want to share with you today are, one, that women have something to contribute in terms of the knowledge of the language that they can contribute to the recorded corpus. And I don't think we don't know this. I just think we ignore it sometimes. And it could be as simple as domain knowledge, but it's also broader. And the second one is they have a crucial role in intergenerational transmission of the language. And I'll explain in a few minutes how that's specifically essential in this community. And then the third lesson that I learned, a big lesson for me, was that non-mixed gender environments allow women a voice in a way that mixed gender environments in this context do not. So considering their contribution to the corpus, I want to parallel my first time there and my second time there. So 2005 to 7 versus 2013. I initially went there to work on my master's thesis research. And I started with the Africa comparative word list, 1700 word list. And my goal was to figure out how many noun classes were used and how it worked in the system. So I started with the word list. And I took the word list from five men who were kind of appointed by the community. They have a language development committee led by elders in the community. And they were kind of commissioned to be available to work for me. And they were also working on other projects, literacy projects as well. And the only woman's input I had in that entire process was a wife's contribution, who was a bystander during one of the recording sessions. But what I found out was that as I was recording the word list and we'd hit a bump, an unknown, then the husband would think for a minute, then he'd kind of look off to the side, and the wife would whisper something. Okay, and then at the time, the husband was the only one with the microphone, and so I had him record it. But she filled in so many gaps of knowledge, and that should have been my clue at the beginning. But during that entire time, I have zero recordings of women from that time period. I wasn't there full time, but considering that I was there many times, I'm a bit ashamed that I didn't record any women. I finished my master's degree and went on to further my studies, and I had professors challenge the number of speakers I was working with. So by the time I went back in 2013, I had people very strongly encouraging me to work with more speakers, but also to work with women and men. And so in 2013, I actually collected data from 6 women and 6 men. And so I evened things out a bit, and they were able to contribute things like narrations of the pair story, give me personal narratives, some folk narratives, and then also continued to collect word list data, because now I was looking at the tonal system. Okay. And just one thing to mention, based on the culture, there's very clear lines between what women do and what men do. And here's an example. I was given a chicken one time, and I had never killed a chicken. And then I learned very soon that I did not have to kill the chicken, because women do not kill chickens. So I didn't have to kill my chicken. I could call the cousin of my friend and he would kill the chicken for me. I could clean the chicken, I could dress the chicken, I could cook the chicken, but I could not kill the chicken. And so culturally, there's they're not quite taboos. There's just expectations about what men and women can do. And if we make language work a thing that men do, then that's what they'll do. I mean, they'll adopt that. And I think we have a position coming in as outsiders. Even as a woman, I came in and the men were given as representatives of the language, not women, to work with me. And that has its own set of issues. But contributing to the corpus is something we all know should be something women do, but we need to sometimes facilitate it in a situation where they otherwise would not be involved. Considering their contribution to the next generation, this language area is multilingual. People speak one or more Kanji language. Many speakers, Tumaten speakers, will also speak Chulalo, or they'll also speak Dukawa. But then if they go further away than that, or even to communicate between those two languages, between those two language communities, they'll use the regional language Hausa. And Hausa is from a completely different language family, but is the lingua franca of northern Nigeria. And then if all the education is purported to be in English, it's not always in English, but to succeed in school, you need to learn English. To get a government job, you need to learn English. And so many people speak their own language at home and in their community, speak Hausa to go to a neighboring community, and then speak English for the purposes of education and government. Okay, so it's a multilingual environment, but it's pretty stable. People are switch languages based on who they're talking to, not based on domain of use, with exception of school and government for English, I would say. But intermarriage is extremely common. Of the five men I worked with in my original visit, two of them have been married for over 20 years to Chulalo women. And these are men who are interested in their own language, they're interested in Tumaten, they want other people to speak Tumaten, they want to be able to read a Tumaten, they want to write a Tumaten, they want to record stories in a Tumaten, they want to make videos in a Tumaten, but their children do not speak Tumaten. The children only speak the local language of the mother. And the women are the ones who are carrying on the local languages, because the children learn a local language, and then they use Hausa, and they use English at school. And so the fathers communicate to their children in Hausa and English, which has other benefits, because in the home, the children have use of these other languages, which are really important to them. But the role of women in transmission of the language is essential. It's not just the role of the home in transmission of language, it's the role of women, particularly in these intermarriage situations. Okay, and then on the last point, mixed gender versus non-mixed gender. In 2005, I mentioned I had the involvement of one woman while her husband was in the same room, and she whispered, and I didn't record her. In 2013, when I started involving women, these were women that I had not necessarily met before, and they were invited to join the project and to come and share what they knew about the language. But because I didn't know them, because of the social dynamic of not knowing them and their level of English being a little bit lower than the men's, such that they weren't comfortable speaking with me, and my level of Hausa not being quite where it needed to be for me to use Hausa for those exchanges, we were in a large group together. But in that large group, where the first of the six women I worked with was sitting in a room with some of her male relatives. And that was the situation, men and women together. And later on, we split into two groups. And my husband was on this trip, and the woman went with me, and my husband stayed with the men. And the dynamic of interaction, the speed of interaction, changed dramatically for both of us. There might be other reasons. Maybe I had been there before and my husband was new, so they interacted with him differently because he was new to, he had never visited the area before. Or maybe they were just freer. But when I was with the woman, she started laughing. She started cracking jokes. She would give me extra examples. She'd speak more. She spoke louder. And so I just want to just outline some of these. So in a mixed gender context, the women remained silent, or the whisper. And they're hesitant to share even when asked directly. And in this setting, in this situation, it's not uncommon to ask a direct question. People aren't offended by it or bothered by it. I don't have to go around. And I was asking for things like, what's the word for, and getting a word. So even when asked directly, they were hesitant. And then if they spoke, they would just kind of defer to the men and then agree or affirm what the men had just said. But when I went to a non-mixed gender environment, the women were more relaxed, and they were eager to share, they were eager to speak. It was one-on-one researcher and consultant. That definitely probably changed the dynamic. There's no shame in saying the wrong thing, perhaps, with another speaker around. But I also found that I was able to conduct a wordless elicitation using Tumaten, which worked out really well, because I could approximate the words. I knew some of the words in this situation. I was trying to get a word list for tonal comparison, and I was doing it across speakers. So I had a transcription of what I thought the word would be, and so I could prompt them with a word, and then they would give it back to me, and I could make the recording that I needed for the tonal information. And it was interesting, because sometimes these women didn't know I knew anything about their language, and so that was another dynamic. But just the atmosphere changed, and the situation was very different. So just to summarize, I just want to remind us what my goal is. My goal is awareness. I am a female researcher who lives in a male-dominated world in general, but I work in a male-dominated society in Nigeria where men make the decisions. It's a patrilineal society. The children take the father's name. Generations are measured by the father. And yet the women are the ones passing the languages on. And because they hold that knowledge and because they transmit that knowledge, I don't want them to be overlooked. And I don't want to keep overlooking them. But then also, as a female researcher on the field, sometimes we just have to ask to work with women. It never crossed my mind. I just wanted somebody to be willing to work with me, and men were suggested. And I just wish that when I originally went, I had connected more with the women for purposes of linguistic research. I connected with the women on all kinds of things, on learning some of the foods that they prepare, on how they take care of their children, on walking down the street, on going to the market, on getting a good deal at the market, all of those kind of things. But when it came to recording the language data, I just left them out. And just for personally trying to figure out ways to get them more involved in the work, because they are so involved in, they're involved in farming, and they're involved in childcare, and they're involved at the home, their time isn't as distributable as the teachers and even some of the religious leaders, some of the pastors in the Christian community among the speakers. They were willing to take time away from their reading or their studying or their preparing to teach to work with me, and it was sanctioned by the government. But the woman who is responsible for feeding her family plus whoever's visiting can't just set aside the preparation. And so I think we have to be proactive in finding ways to make that possible, to continue working with the women of the community. So, thank you.
So we actually have quite a bit of time for questions. So,
So when you involved women, did you go to the husbands or somebody in charge for permission? How did you approach the permission process?
I didn't actually think very much about it, which was probably not the best. But what I did was enlist the help of one of the consultants I had worked with in the first trip, who was well-connected in the community. And I told him that I wanted to work with men and women. And so he was able to find people who would volunteer. So they came without me seeking their permission from anyone specifically, but they came for very limited amounts of time. And most of the women, two of the women were married, but the rest were single women. And so they were more free, they weren't yet married. Because the married women that have more responsibility. And the four of the six, the unmarried women were also students. We may have been there over break or on the weekend or something. They came in there over free time. Yes?
I'm curious, because some language communities have differences in the way men and women speak. So right. I'm wondering, once you did include women, were there differences in what you documented between the two genders?
There's a lot of differences in this community. So the Tumaten community has 9 dialects. And because I was in a town, the women came from different areas. And so I haven't teased out yet if it's a difference between women's speech or dialect difference. But there's no claim that there's a distinct way of men and women talking. They don't tell me that they say it differently. In kind of to that point, in the traditional religion, the men do have a a rite of passage ceremony that has a whole bunch of language associated with it the women don't know anything about, and I don't know anything about, but that's why we need co-ed teams, I guess, to find these things out.
Could I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
I also wondered if the culture has any transgendered or third gender, and if that has been something to include, because that should, I would argue that should also be included, not just looking at the binary of gender,
sure.
But more inclusive.
The dominant culturally, there's only two. It's a Muslim area with a small Christian population and very and then adherence to the traditional religion as well. But it's not overt and it's not categorized. There's no third category or yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions?
When you're compiling a word list, like are you doing thematic or what direction did you go with your word?